Hi, this is Debbie Voiles, coach at Mojo for Running, with podcast number 85, Balance and Proprioception, Part 1. Say that 10 times fast. Let's talk about the role of balance in running today. And then, at the end, I have a big announcement for you. So hang on. It always amazes me that I so seldom see articles written or hear runners talking about balance. It really is super critical. Just think about it. When you're running, you're never standing on both feet, right? Whenever you have both feet on the ground at the same time, you're walking, not running. Essentially, when you're running, you're hopping from foot to foot. Doesn't it seem to be a good idea to be as stable throughout your stride as possible? There are other ways to become a more stable runner, like strengthening your muscles, especially the muscles in your core, but balance is huge as well. Your stride will become more efficient. You will maintain better balance between how much work your right and left side do, which is always desirable. Let me digress for a moment. I fell down a flight of stairs a few years back. Basically, I bounced down several steps on my left hip. Amazingly, nothing broke, and the excruciating pain was gone about 10 days later, which is when I resumed running, and that was with the doctor's approval. What I didn't realize, though, was that after that, I ran differently. I favor my left side. My friends started joking that they always needed to run on my right side because when I ran, I would always veer to the left, bumping into them repeatedly. Apparently, my right side was doing all the work and my right steps were longer. When I checked the bottom of a pair of my worn-out Hoka shoes, it was obvious. Wow. To look at them, you'd think each shoe was from a completely different pair. Of course, I have many pairs of running shoes, but because the Hokas have the softest sole, the difference was the most obvious there. The left shoe still looked new, and the right shoe looked like it was ready to be replaced. My chiropractor was amazed, and he did verify, after checking out my mechanics and doing some strength testing, that I was, in fact, doing all the work with my right side, and my left side was just along for the ride. The muscles in my left hip, as it turned out, were not firing. I was compensating with all my other muscles. Now, that's a big problem for many reasons, and I realized I needed to commence a serious program of rehab for that hip. It was slow going, but I'm a different runner now. Oddly, it was about 3, maybe 4 or 5 years after the fall before I realized the problem and started to work on remedying it, making it a big project because by that time, the lopsided, inefficient gait had become ingrained. I had to unlearn it. I go into this long explanation because this is not at all unique. So often, our running form suffers because of something. Maybe you fell and injured your shoulder. You still could run, but maybe while the shoulder was still bothering you, you held it differently. Maybe you stopped swinging that arm as much in the normal way, without even realizing it. By the time it was healed, you had created a new habit, a new running form that was slightly contorted. If you're not swinging your right arm, then you're probably compensating by swinging your left arm more, and that could cause a host of issues. Your whole body's working differently, and it's not correct. Maybe it would cause you to twist your body toward the non-swinging arm, and anytime you change your arm swing, guess what? You can bet the movement of your legs is affected as well. Taking that point a step further, you can be sure that anytime you have an injury, it affects the way you run. There are certainly some times when it's safe to run with an injury, especially if it's, say, an upper body injury. Your physician may say it's okay to go ahead and run, but you must consider that your form may be affected. In fact, it almost certainly will be affected. This is where physical therapists or chiropractors, or both, are so critical. Any medical professional you visit should analyze your ability to use the injured limb and evaluate your whole gait, both walking and running, your strengths and weaknesses, and they will ask lots of questions. That person will be, hopefully, laser-focused on getting you back to where you were before the injury, strengthening any muscles weakened by the injury, and having you do the necessary stretches to keep that part of the body functioning properly through its full range of movement. This is so critical, And this is why I always recommend seeing a medical professional as soon as you realize you have an injury, because to continue to train without knowing the extent of the injury or how it's impacting you with and without the correct treatment, you'll almost certainly make it worse. It's one thing to be able to run. It's another to return to good form. And without returning to your prior form, you'll probably experience other injuries. Now you're saying, what does all this have to do with balance? Well, as you might imagine, I could balance pretty well on my right leg after my fall down the stairs, but balancing on my left leg was quite difficult. For a long time, I had just chalked it up to the fact that my left side was my non-dominant side. But I was wrong. When I started working harder to bring that side around, doing more reps with the weaker side, that left side started to do its part. And now I can balance on my left side almost as well as my right. That's an oversimplification, all of it, but you get what I mean. My left shoe appears almost as worn as my right now as well, which is a clear indication that my body's working more naturally, more evenly. The point is that it's all wrapped up together. I had to work really hard to get my left butt muscles working again, but I did, and that was a big deal. I did strengthening exercises, but I also worked on balance every day, at least once a day, and sometimes twice a day. When you work on balance, you're training proprioception. That comes from the Latin word proprius, which means one's own, and the word perception. It is your awareness of where the parts of your body are in space. When someone has poor balance, that means they have poor proprioception. Without proprioception, when you throw a ball, you'd have to watch your hand instead of looking where you want the ball to go. Proprioception enables us to know where our hand is without looking at it. Without proprioception, we would have to look at our feet when we run instead of looking down the street. The goal is for proprioception to be subconscious. However, after an injury, because we tend to favor the injured area, we have to start back at the conscious level and retrain during rehab. It's my experience that many people returning from injury fail to recognize this important step, and it always comes back to bite them. So often people recover from injury thinking they're fine because nothing hurts anymore, only to experience another injury in a very short time. If you work with a physical therapist, this is certainly to be a part of the initial evaluation, and then one of the main goals of the therapy will be to return you to subconscious normal proprioception. This is key because, as always, the goal is for all your body parts and mechanisms to work 100% at 100% of their capacity. It's not just a matter of getting the muscles stronger and getting them to work through the full range of motion. You also have to train your brain again to know what message to send when you give the 100% effective use of the injured part. You see, your brain got accustomed to the part being broken. It likely compensated. If you don't go through a proper rehab program, you may get the injured part working, but the muscles that you had incorporated to take over will continue to work instead of the muscles around the injured area. That's what happened to me. But don't get the wrong idea. This isn't just about injuries. Every runner would do well to do balance work every single day. It's one of the easiest means of improving your running, and it's appropriate for any runner of any level because doing balance work is not intense. It's a kind of exercise you can do every day, a couple of times a day. You can even do balance exercises standing in your kitchen while you're cooking your dinner. Vision is a key factor in proprioception as well. Our eyes sends information to our brain, which sends impulses to specific muscles and other parts of our team to tell them what to do, including telling our muscles when to contract and for how long. One way to make balance training more challenging is to close your eyes. Without that familiar feedback, you have to work much harder. The combination and timing of muscle contractions is what enables you to move. As you work on balance, this symphony of interactions is fine-tuned. People tell me, my balance is terrible. They state that as fact, as if it's a permanent and irreparable condition, but of course it's not. The more you practice, the better you'll get, and that applies to everyone. You could be a 30-year-old with a terrible sense of balance, but There are also 70-year-olds with great balance. When you challenge your sense of balance by standing on one foot, for example, you start to fall and you have to put the other foot down to catch yourself. You've just trained your brain. When you have to put the other foot down, it's like sending a message to the brain that it didn't do something right, the timing was wrong, that an adjustment needs to be made. Some element of the orchestra failed to play its note, or played the wrong note, or played it at the wrong time, just like the musicians in an orchestra. If you keep practicing, you get the sequence down perfectly. It will become automatic. For most of my life, I was fascinated by juggling, and I always wanted to learn. When I was about 50 years old, we took a cruise to the Caribbean, my husband and I and the kids. It turned out one of the entertainers on that cruise was a juggler. Of course, I said, we're definitely going to that show. But better yet, when we received the ship's activity schedule, we learned that the juggler was going to be offering a juggling class one afternoon. As you can imagine, I was all over that. He taught us a few simple things, and most people were able to get some sense of how it works. But after the one-hour class was over, almost everyone moved on to other activities. No one actually completely got it by that point. The rest of my family had had enough and headed for the pool. Not me, though. I stayed, along with a handful of others, and continued to work on the skills he had taught us, again and again and again. I stayed right in that spot for another hour, and gradually it started to come to me. I started to get the hang of it. By the end of the second hour, I had it. That was 12 years ago. Ever since, I've kept 3 hacky sack balls in my underwear drawer, and every so often, I take them out and practice. I get a little rusty, but it's like riding a bike. I never forget. And after practicing again for 10 minutes, I'm good. I learned more than how to juggle that day. I realized that to master something like that just means doing it again and again to train your brain in how to coordinate the timing of movements just right. Juggling those small light balls did not require any strength. It required eye-hand coordination that just had to be learned. It was my brain I was training. You've all learned to ride a bike. No one gets it the first or the second time, right? But it doesn't take very long. Every time mom lets go of the back of the seat when she's pushing you down the street and you're on your own, you go a little bit farther than the last time until instantly it clicks and you keep going. When you get it, it's because you've trained your brain by practicing. You've trained it what exactly to do, to direct your muscles to do the right thing at the precise moment to keep you going. If you work at it, anyone, everyone can have excellent balance. At least that's what I believe. It's all about training your brain. Improving your balance will mean improving your proprioception. That will improve coordination, and your running form will be more efficient. And that's the goal. We don't want any wasted motion. Right now, I want you to do a test if you possibly can. I want you to balance on one foot for 30 seconds, then switch to the other side. If you're much better on one side than the other, then there's a good possibility practicing balance exercises every day will have that fixed in no time, and you'll likely see an improvement in your running speed, comfort, and injuries will be less likely. If you have a hard time balancing on either foot, well, obviously, then you have a little more work to do, but the same thing, it'll pay off down the road in your running quite a lot. Improved balance will mean less chance of injury from a fall as well, because you'll be less likely to fall. Every runner is going to trip from time to time, but you may be able to recover without hitting the ground. I love to run trails, but the opportunity to fall is much greater. One of my favorite places to run is a place known to Floridians as Croom. It's in the middle of the state in the Withlacoochee State Forest. Beautiful trails. But of course, as with most trails, it has its share of roots to jump over. Years ago, I started thinking of each long trail run as a competition, or maybe more of a contest, between the runner and the trail. I remember running with my friend Sally, and we'd always keep score. Every time we tripped but didn't go down, we got a point. Anytime we fell and hit the ground, the trail got a point. So a score of trail 1, Debbie 2, meant that I tripped 3 times, but I only actually hit the ground once. I know that may sound treacherous, but remember, many times we'd run 20 miles, 25 miles, and no one would ever hit the ground. Trips are unavoidable, but with good balance, you can avoid hitting the ground most of the time. I've had some epic falls, epic trips, and epic saves. Sometimes a root catches my foot, and as if in slow motion, I fly forward, feet striking the ground in unexpected ways, arms flailing, and somehow, miraculously, I wind up several feet from the spot where I tripped, or many feet from the spot where I tripped, but still, I'm upright, never hitting the ground. Each time I save myself from a faceplant, I thank myself for all the balance exercises. Okay, that's it for today as far as talking about balance. In the next episode, I'll explain many specific drills and exercises you can do to improve your balance. Now I hope you'll stay with me for a few more minutes because I have something super important to talk to you about. If you know me, well, the people who do know me locally, know that I'm an open book. I tell it like it is. It's what I do and what I want to do today. I need to talk to you about this podcast. If you've been listening for a while, you may have noticed that sometimes there's no episode for several weeks, for over a month. Here's the thing. The last episode was almost my last one. In fact, I told my husband that number 84 was going to be the last episode of the Mojo for Running podcast. Then I got a few more testimonials and got excited and just thought I have to find a way to keep doing this podcast because when I get those posts on Facebook or emails, it's just incredibly rewarding. Anyway, it's probably surprising to you that number 84 was almost the last episode because as you can probably tell, I have a passion for running and certainly for this podcast. I've been doing it since 2009. But here's the thing. As I'm sure you know, podcasts are free. All podcasters are faced with the challenge of trying to monetize their podcast, and that includes me. The options are advertising, promoting an associated program such as a membership program, or collecting some kind of tips in the way of support from listeners, or some combination of those things. I have really resisted the ad model because I'd need at least 2 ads per episode, and I just hate to interrupt the flow of the content. I just don't like the idea of putting 2 or 3 ads in a podcast that might only be 15 minutes long. Well, as you know, I do have a coaching program, but unfortunately, very few people from this podcast enroll in it. The people in that program always tend to come from my other podcast, the Beginner Runner Village podcast. They seem to be the ones most interested in coaching, and I get that. So the point is that this podcast brings in 0 income. And I got to be honest, I just can't justify continuing to do it for free. I love doing it, but it takes a lot of time. It's kind of crazy that this podcast is now number 5 out of all running podcasts on iTunes, and there are about 200. And it's really number 3 because one of the ones that is ahead of it in the rankings on iTunes is a podcast about finance. So I really don't think that counts. I don't know why it's in there, but it is, and it's been there a while. And one of the other ones is just music to run to. So that's pretty great. And it gets downloaded. This podcast gets downloaded 5,000 times per week in 139 countries. Again, pretty great. But no one pays for any of those downloads, not a dollar and not a cent. What if just 3,000 people were willing to contribute $8 per year, not per week or per month, per year? That's roughly the equivalent of buying me 2 cups of coffee. If you enjoyed these podcasts, if they're helpful, would you buy me a cup of coffee or 2? Here's my plan. I'm going to make it possible for my listeners to go to my mojoforrunning.com website and thank me for this podcast by contributing a few dollars. Even a small consideration from all those people would be a huge, huge thing to me. It would be huge and it would make a difference. To facilitate this, I've placed a button on the mojoforrunning.com site that says, "Buy me coffee." If you follow that link, you can click 1 cup of coffee, which is a $5 donation, a cup of coffee and a muffin for $8, wine and chocolate for $15, or dinner for $25. Dessert and a drink and dinner would be $50. I'll also have a donate button, which allows you to enter any amount. Now, all of those buttons go to a PayPal link. But when you click the button, if you don't have a PayPal account, that's fine. If you look around, you'll see the words, "Don't have a PayPal account." If you click that, you'll be able to just pay with a credit card. It won't be a subscription, whatever amount you choose. It will be just a one-time contribution. Let's see how this goes. You know how I strive to stick to valuable content. But on the other hand, I did not want this podcast to just disappear without my listeners having any clue what happened and without giving you the opportunity to do your part to keep it going. I listen to podcasts too. I listen to them when I run, a lot. And one of the ones I listened to stopped abruptly 7 months ago. I am hoping that this opportunity for you to support this podcast will make it possible for me to continue. I don't want that to happen. I appreciate you all. I love getting your emails, and I want to continue. But without your support, I don't know what's going to happen. If this doesn't work out, I'll probably try the advertising model. But let's just see. Now, as usual, I'll finish with a quote. Small acts, when multiplied times millions of people, can change the world. That's from Howard Zinn. I would modify that to say small acts, when multiplied times thousands of podcast listeners, can make the critical difference to me and to the future of this podcast.